Welcome to another episode of Menopause Uprising with me, your host, Catherine O'Keefe. So this is a conversation that I have been so excited to have for quite a few months now. And today's guest has a very busy calendar, so it took a bit of to-ing and fro-ing to get us together, but we got there in the end. I really hope you can take the time to listen to today's episode with Minister Roderick O'Gorman, who is the Minister for Children, Disability, Equality and Integration in Ireland. We had a super chat about the work that Roderick is doing, about the importance of menopause in Ireland, and also about the progress we have made and we continue to make in relation to women's health in Ireland. I really hope you enjoy the session. Don't forget to rate or review in the comments on whatever platform you're listening to. Thank you. So, Roderick, I'm thrilled to have you here with me today. And I guess from my perspective, I very much would see you are renowned in Ireland in relation to the role you've taken in equality and inclusion. And certainly as a parent, you know, I would thank you for a huge amount of work that you've done, you know, certainly for parents, carers and also for children. And I was so excited when I saw that you were, you know, bringing menopause to the forefront. Yeah. And a huge part of the work that I do is around the diversity and inclusion aspect of menopause, mm-hmm. because it is such a key aspect of a person's life. And I guess the other part of it is it's not just the person going through it, it's all the touch points in that person's life. But just in relation to supporting menopause in the workplace, why do you feel, you know, that's so important now that we are taking a very active role in Ireland?
I think it's so important because it's going to happen to every single woman, be they work in the workforce, be they not in the workforce. But because I think about 80% of women, when they experience the menopause, they have quite significant symptoms, be they physical symptoms, be they emotional symptoms. Mm. That's a very significant body of the workforce who for, you know, a couple of years in their life, in probably if you're looking at solely from a workforce point of view, one of the most productive parts of their life when they're, you know, many of them may be approaching senior, being in senior management roles where they have, where they're experiencing symptoms that as a society, we've always been quite reluctant to talk about and just kind of, you know, just don't go there. And that's been the approach. And, you know, I remember talking to a colleague who I won't name, who said, he did an interview about menopause, about menstruation, and someone mentioned afterwards that he'd avoided saying the word period in about at all in a 10 minute interview just because of the awkwardness. And it does exist, you have to admit, particularly among men, there's an awkwardness, there's a reluctance to go there. So we have, I suppose, society has created this kind of mystique, this myth, and this desire not to talk about this particular issue. It's an absolutely real issue for every woman, and it has very significant impacts on a very significant number of women. And it's because of that that I think we need to address it, be it in the workplace, as some of the work I'm hoping to advance will cover, or be it the wider health supports and that's work that the Department of Health have been advancing.
Yeah. And I know I've been involved in the Women's Task Force since that started in 2019. So like it's been great, you know, the awareness campaign and all the strides that we're taking there. But just when you say like it has been very much that case of push it under the carpet, hasn't it? Yeah. And, you know, we don't talk about it. I can remember I was working with a company over on the West, and it was actually one of their male directors who had said, listen, I want to get someone in to talk about menopause. Mm-hmm. So I went down and they were shift workers. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, different times and so forth. But when, you know, it was brilliant. We had loads of men who came to the sessions. But he as he introduced me, he was saying, you know, I really struggled to say the word menopause when I was bringing it up to my team.
Yeah.
He said, now as you use the word more, it becomes more comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a huge step forward in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another key part of it is the fact that, you know, I think we're making great strides in Ireland in relation to many aspects of women's health, but particularly, I think, around menopause and menstruation.
And as you know, this government has launched a women's health action plan and setting out a wide range of health initiatives specifically directed towards women. And obviously, as you know, there's the six menopause clinics that have been set up around the country, very much designed for women who are experiencing those most severe symptoms during menopause. But it's also looking at issues like the support we're providing now for IVF, the legislation to allow IVF to allow surrogacy, for example, even, you know, measures in ensuring that where a woman is undertaking a termination, that they won't be harassed in terms of attending a hospital or clinic. So I do think this government is taking women's health issues seriously. And I like to feel within my own department, both on, as you mentioned, on the early years side, but also across the range of kind of employment equality issues, we're also looking to take those issues very seriously too.
Yeah, no, and I think it's been brilliant. I think for me, like, you know, I can remember my mum going through menopause. She had no support and definitely nobody was talking about it. And for her, she'd had a hysterectomy, so it would have been definitely more challenging. So it's so refreshing now to be part of the generation that is, you know, consciously bringing menopause to the forefront. And, you know, I think we're doing a lot, and I think we've more work to do. But I think certainly we're making great strides forwards in terms of when we look at what's happening internationally and we look at Ireland, we're certainly up there in the top five progressive countries, definitely when it comes to menopause. And we are kind of making a big shift now in relation to menstruation as well. But what do you think could be the next steps that, you know, we can take in terms of maybe just pushing us that little bit further?
Well, our department earlier this year commissioned research looking at how we design template policies to support employers, policies around menopause and menstruation more broadly. And I actually, I asked the department to commission that research primarily after I had a really good conversation with some Fórsa Trade Union, some of their activists who were focusing on this issue. And we've just, as you know, we earlier this week announced the domestic violence leave. And we have put in place policies to support employers implementing that. And I thought, well, maybe there are template policies that we can put in place on broader issues as well, issues that employers might feel reluctant to go to address or uncertain how to address. That's what we found when we were addressing domestic violence in the work, victims of domestic violence when they're in their kind of their workspace. And it's also what we found in terms of this. So we've commissioned that research. We'll respond to it once it's completed. But some of the things that have kind of come up during that is some of it's very basic temperature control in an office or in a workplace, the material in a uniform. And again, in terms of heat retention. And some of it is that culture thing we spoke about earlier on in terms of being able to go to your line manager, be they male or female, and be able to say, I'm having bad menstrual cramps today. Would it be possible that I, you know, work from home today? Or just being able to have that conversation, because I think that's
key.
That's absolutely key. And once we do that, I think we can do more. So I suppose we're proposing guidance at the moment. We're not proposing anything mandatory right now. But look, I think guidance supports best practice. And we know a lot of companies in both the public and private sector are taking steps already. So I know the civil service have done a really good piece at the moment, and that impacts, you know, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of employees in the country. I know, I think Spain have legislated for a specific leave for menstrual leave. I suppose we've brought in a good number of leaves in the course of this government. And I know some employers groups, they're just, you know, there's quite a lot of change right now, and maybe they're looking for a little bit of time to bed that down. And, you know, you have to kind of listen to the needs of employers as well as the needs of employees. But I think for now, it's about guidance, it's about support, it's about better information and setting out best practice on the workplace side. And I think we can achieve a lot for, you know, a very large proportion of female employees, female workers through doing that.
And, you know, I think the guidance documents are key. Mm-hmm. And I know I had been part of the review of the civil service policy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that as you see, you know, I would probably say is like a guidance can be just as important because it lays that kind of foundation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we look at companies in Ireland, and internationally, just, you know, I've worked since I started, I've been in workplaces since 2017. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with probably over 350 workplaces mm-hmm. at this stage. And like you say, there's many of them who are now right, okay, what more can I do? What are my next steps? Mm-hmm. And they are kind of looking like that. They're looking at temperature control. Mm. They're looking at uniforms, particularly if it's depending on the work environment. Mm-hmm. And there's so many practical things you can do around that. And I think it's understanding supporting menopause in the workplace. It does not have to be expensive.
No.
Getting a fan for someone who's having challenges. Yeah. I mean, you can get them on Amazon cheap enough, exactly. You know. So I think sometimes it's just actually, and I think for employers, like you said, Roderick, it's kind of knowing that, listen, you know, what can I look at? What are the practical things that might be? Often one thing that comes up for me is a lot of people say, oh, you know, let's move, you know, a person by the window. And I'm kind of like, well, actually, by the window can be the worst place to put someone if they're in direct sunlight and having hot flushes, you know. So it's always, I guess, for me, you know, I would always say it's the role the person is doing in the individual experience of menopause, because you can have two people sitting beside each other in the same work environment and they can be having two completely different
experiences
symptoms
of the menopause.
So look, I think having the guidance documents there, I think that's huge. And, you know, certainly we were the very first country in the world who did a national awareness campaign around menopause. Mm-hmm. Other countries have brought out guidances, but, you know, I think we're definitely up there. There's so many countries that are behind in terms of the conversation. Yeah. So,
and I think looking at both, I suppose the overall information and awareness element, real supports in the workplace, but also then very tangible health supports as well, and recognizing for many women, hopefully for most women, menopause won't be a health issue. It'll be just an issue that occurs in their life, but for a number of women, it can be a health issue and quite a significant one as well. Yeah. And I think that's why and recognizing the complexity of. It's a small number of women, thankfully, but the complexity of symptoms they face and having those real tangible and specialised services in terms of the menopause clinics.
Yeah. And I think like if you look, you know, particularly like when we talk about the symptoms, if you look at, I did a menopause in the workplace survey and the top symptom, the number one symptom that women will say impacts in their work and it's brain fog.
Yeah.
And we know if you look outside of the workplace, it's the one symptom.
Yeah.
So many women will say to me, give me a hot flush,
night
sweats any day over kind of the psychological symptoms of menopause. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, you know, certainly for women who have comorbidities where it's more complex, you know, the public clinics are fantastic help and support. I think the other area where I would find a lot of employers now, and I would be a huge advocate of, is the employee assistance programs. Mm-hmm. Because if you have psychological challenges, be it brain fog, anxiety or whatever it is, they can be a great benefit as well. And, you know, I know that, you know, in the UK as well, there would be great support of kind of just sometimes, you know, it's having somebody else to talk to, maybe outside your circle that kind of, you know, can bring some support.
And I'm sure for many women experiencing it, even to admit to brain fog is I suppose there's a fear maybe around indicating I'm not performing up to my best at the moment. Yeah. What are they going to say? Yeah. Is this going to impact on, you know, promotion or, you know, so I like, yeah. again,
I can attest
opening,
to that one.
Yeah, yeah. opening the space where it's yeah. okay to say that and yeah. link it to, you know, the physical change that you're experiencing right now and say, this is clearly as a result of that. It's not because I'm working any less hard or any less dedicated to the company and creating the space where that can be said safely, yeah. I think is really valuable.
So important, mm-hmm. isn't it? Because, like, I don't know if you've seen my TEDx, but I spoke about my own mm-hmm. experience. I was a director in investment banking yeah. for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And one of my real big wake-up calls with perimenopause yeah. was I was presenting yeah. senior management over mm. from New York.
Yeah.
I was so used to it,
yeah.
Roderick.
Yeah.
I could do it in my sleep.
Yeah.
But this one particular day, I was in perimenopause.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, okay, I'm going to push this aside. I'm going to yeah. get on with my career. But the brain fog,
yeah.
just, it was, I mean, it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I remember I left it. And at the time I was working back in Ireland and I out in Central Park. And I just left that meeting and I was like, my head down. I was like yeah. mortified, mm-hmm. the embarrassment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what I found was after that, before any meeting, I over-prepared
yeah.
and I was
yeah.
so anxious.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of my own experience mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. kind of, you know, really led me to, you know, very much to just shine a light around menopause that the impact it has in work, mm-hmm. but also the fact that there's so much more than hot flushes and
night
sweats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I always kind of say they're the tip of the iceberg mm-hmm. and it's kind of as you go deeper,
yeah.
you know, there's a lot in there because
yeah.
if we look at work, if your brain fog, if you're suffering symptoms of that, that then that triggers anxiety, but it also impacts your self-esteem,
course,
your confidence.
Course, yeah.
And
right.
that's what we would see that so many women going through anywhere from peri and mm-hmm. into post-menopause
yeah. mm-hmm.
will suffer a real drop in confidence mm-hmm. if they're struggling, particularly
yeah, yeah.
at work.
And I think, again, creating that awareness, that understanding of the range of symptoms, the range mm-hmm. of impacts of menopause will hopefully, and it probably won't happen immediately, but over time, maybe lessen the mystique, lessen the stigmatization, and hopefully mm-hmm. then maybe lessen the impact on women in terms of self-esteem and the like.
Yeah, yeah, big time. And I think, like, you know, I love that word mystique because it is just mm. getting rid of that, isn't it? And for me, the way I always kind of think about it is, you know, not every woman, either by choice or circumstance, will go through pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Every woman will go through menopause
yeah.
and you can't avoid it. Mm-hmm. You can't skirt it. I know they did talk a year or two ago in the US about, you know, a medication that might bypass mm-hmm. menopause.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a natural, inevitable stage
yeah.
of life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the key thing is knowing that once you get a handle on your symptoms, that then you can set yourself up.
Yeah.
And then look at the opportunities mm-hmm. of menopause. And
yeah.
I think that's, for me, that's a very important part of the conversation in the workplace
mm-hmm.
is support from your employer
mm-hmm.
And trusted sources. But then it's also understanding that this is a whole new chapter
yeah.
in your life. And you often find for many women, once they get a handle on the symptoms and everything, they want something new
mm-hmm,
and maybe
mm-hmm.
to, maybe it might be investing more in your career. It might be that now maybe your kids have grown up
mm-hmm.
and maybe they've left home, or now it could simply be you might have younger kids
yeah.
too. So, you know, I guess you're trying to manage everything with the sandwich years at the same
course,
time,
yeah,
right? You know,
yeah,
the kids,
yeah,
parents
indeed, yeah,
and your
yeah, yeah.
kind of...
And look, and I suppose that's where those kind of wider range of supports that the mm. government are working on, whether it's the introduction of remote working or flexible working, additional parents leave and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're very conscious we're trying to become more conscious of the need to support parents and both parents. And I think that's probably part of that wider conversation too. Support and empower dads to say, actually, no, I have 7 weeks now, soon to be 9 weeks, parents leave, and I'm going to take it.
Mm.
And my workplace should be as willing to grant that as it's to grant, you know, my wife or my partner her
yeah,
26
yeah.
weeks maternity leave.
Yeah, which is brilliant, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? I mean,
it is,
so
yeah.
so
yeah.
progressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I remember when I worked at an American bank, and I mean, My Lord, they used to be so jealous of us.
I'm sure.
Because, and that was just with our normal leave. So, I mean, it is fantastic. And I think, you know, sorry, I think with Ireland, there's so many aspects we'd be so proud of. We've achieved.
And
you know?
I think that wider discussion we'll be having on care in the next few months in the context of the referendum, you know, the removal of that article in the Constitution that states a woman has duties in the home, the removal of that. But its replacement with something that recognises the value of care done in the family, irrespective of it being done by mams or dads, sons or daughters, but also, you know, placing an onus on government to support care. Because I know, I suppose, as a constituency politician, when you are going around knocking on doors, you meet so many families where, you know, there's maybe a child with a disability or elderly parents where a parent, a sibling is giving so much care. And I think we all recognise the state needs to do more to support that situation because they are taking, you know, an incredibly important piece of work and not leaving it for the state. It's being done there. And I think that is the conversation that we've been having over the last number of years in terms of women's place in the workforce, women's place in society, kind of knocking away some of the shackles that still existed in terms of maybe the Eighth Amendment and the like. Also has to be looked at in the context of the vast majority of care still being done by women in our society and the importance of changing that conversation. But I do think there are changes happening there. I certainly know among, I'm not a dad myself, but a lot of my male friends are dads in the last few years. And I think there's a far greater just expectation and just acceptance that, we have to do a significant portion of the care, and our wives, our partners want to be able to go back to work after their maternity, after maybe that first year, and that there's an expectation that the care role is maybe more shared than you know, in my parents' generation.
Yeah, and I probably live in proof of that, because when there was stages when, say, you know, my career in the bank would have been quite intensive.
Intense, of course,
and my husband took a year or two out and he stayed at home with the kids.
Yeah.
And then I took a year or two out and I stayed at home. So I think, you know, I think it is the way society is going. Mm-hmm. And I think we just need that kind of equilibrium, isn't it? Just, you know, that the support can come from whoever. And I guess a large part now, we also know with women and with men as well, but primarily women, is the aging parents.
Yeah.
And it's, like I said, it's those sandwich years, which, you know, again, when, if you're going through menopause and you're tackling that, and then you have all of the other obligations and responsibilities, it can put such a toll on a person's experience, you know, and it becomes another stress. And so I think, you know, supports in that area, you know, they're so important. And if we look at the progression that we have made in Ireland, why do you think we are, and I know we've made it on many fronts, but why do you think we are so open now to, you know, tackling women's health and being so progressive compared to many other countries?
Well, look, I think part of it is that for so long we were late, we were slow in terms of the, you know, improvement of the status of women in Irish society. And really, you know, you see our joining the European Union, the European Economic Community, as it was in the early 70s, that was a really important element. Like, it was only then that the marriage bar for women in the civil service was removed, which, you know, is still just incredible to me. Like, I'm in a department where a majority of our, you know, assistant secretaries, we did, you know, the gender pay gap reporting. We're the only department that has a gender pay gap in favour of women rather than favour of men, just because we've so many women at kind of those, the upper level in the department. And just the idea that all of them would be gone if you know, under that old system of the marriage bar, it's unthinkable to me. So we made that change then, and I suppose in the last number of years, recognizing I suppose the legacy of mother and baby homes, and just recognizing the extent to which the role of women, and particularly unmarried women, was so marginalized in our society, I think there's maybe the counterpoint to that is that recognition now that we really need to do more, whether it's in terms of the workplace, whether it's in terms of health supports, whether it's in terms of safety, and that's certainly in terms of the work, the domestic violence leave that I've brought in, the work Minister McEntee has been doing in terms of the third national strategy on domestic violence, setting up a domestic violence agency specifically dedicated to tackling DSGBV in our society. I think we have taken some really important steps. I think the unions have been important. I think I think activist groups have been important. I think women, I suppose, within politics have been important as well. And I do think the campaign around repeal was very significant as well, as it allowed allowed a lot of very brave women share their stories where they had a termination, and I suppose just created a much more a more raw conversation about women's health and the decisions that, that women have to make in many circumstances. And that has, I think, opened a space where those what previously might have been considered awkward or just I don't want to say unpleasant, but maybe what was considered an embarrassing conversation by a lot of men about issues like menopause, like menstruation, is easier to have now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, I know the Stop the Stigma campaign, which the nine coalition unions, I mean, you know, that's a fantastic piece of work in relation to menstruation and menopause and in the workplace. And I do think, you know, like you say, there's so many, I guess, different interwoven paths that have come together to really highlight women's health. And I think the changes in relation to domestic abuse, I mean, that's life changing for people who are, you know, unfortunately in those circumstances. And, you know, that's a very, very challenging subject to bring into into your life, but even into the workplace. You know, I think that is, you know, will be hugely beneficial.
And I do remember I was part of the Green Party team that negotiated the current programme for government. And we were very clear. We got that line in that there's an epidemic of domestic violence in Irish society. And it was very important for us in terms of setting out on, you know, 3, 4, 5 year of government to call that out at the start and let that influence. And that's why we have the third national strategy. We've got the commitment to double refuge spaces. We've got the domestic violence leave that I've brought in through my own department. But I think it flows from recognizing a very real problem. And I think COVID, if it's one of the few positives of COVID, is that there was that focus and that recognition that women who are at risk and children who are at risk were at even greater risk during that period. And that conversation about that has actually been sustained subsequent to COVID, you know, lessening as a public health issue.
Yeah. And I think COVID, like, you know, it helped in that respect. It also helped in relation to menopause. I mean, many women will say the relief of working at home.
Of course,
can open a window for your temperature. Because when standard temperature control levels were set, they were based on the male body. They weren't based on the female body. You
know? Another thing set according to men.
My husband can be going around in a t-shirt and I'm still there with my coat on.
And again, within our department, like, we've legislated for flexible work and remote work, and flexible work is related to parents and carers. Remote work is available now to all workers, and early in 2024, the codes of conduct from the Workplace Relations Commission will have been written, and those two new forms of flexible working arrangements will be available to parents, but also to all workers as well. And I think that again is, you know, the fact that that can happen and can happen quite easily for a very large number of employers. Not everyone, we accept that, but for a very large number, is another, you know, positive that we can take from those difficult months and years with COVID.
And I guess we're in a whole new workplace now since COVID. And, you know, I think that's still kind of all bedding down, but in ways like changes like that will add to it. And I think certainly for, you know, many women, you know, particularly with menstruation, if you have heavy periods, if you have endometriosis, any of this, I mean, the ability to work from home It just takes pressure off because yeah. you can think when you're going to bed, actually, if I'm really bad tomorrow, yeah. it's okay. I can work yeah. from home. Yeah. And yeah. and my employer knows I can do my job yeah. 100% yeah. working yeah. from home. And yeah. I think that's one thing that I know a lot of women would have been more nervous about, mm-hmm. you know, maybe, you know, oh God, maybe, you know, it will impact how I'm perceived. Just yeah. like you mentioned earlier, it's, you know, one of the things, particularly when you look at brain fog, mm-hmm. is the concern, and it can be a very valid concern mm-hmm. depending on the workplace you're in, is that it might prevent you yeah. getting opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the more we have the conversation, the more everyone is brought in on part of that conversation, the more that we make that normal. Mm-hmm. Roderick, when I go into workplaces, and I generally now every single talk I'll do, it will be mixed.
Yeah.
So, and the majority of men will say at the end of it, I never had a clue. Yeah. I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just hot flushes. Mm-hmm. I thought mm-hmm. it was just maybe moods. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you can bring that spotlight yeah. to actually understand there's so much more going on here, and you find the majority of men, they all want to help,
yeah.
you know, and which is fabulous. It is, and yeah. it's little steps, you know, at work, outside of work, mm-hmm. can make such a difference. Mm-hmm. to someone's experience as you go through menopause. It's all about just shattering the taboo and just making it normal. I have three boys, so you know, they're, you know, we don't naturally talk about mm-hmm. periods and things, but my Lord, these three guys, they have that biology yeah. chapter done. Yeah. So, you yeah. know, I'm always yeah. kind of saying to them, you know, it will stand to them, because will. Understanding, yeah. and, you know, the fact that they can, my youngest, who's 11, like, he'll just talk about menopause. Yeah. It's like normal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
he'll talk about periods yeah. and it's normal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's just mm-hmm. a great gift
yeah.
that we can kind of share with each mm-hmm. other, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
In relation to supporting menopause in the workplace, what would you say, you know, would your advice be to employers who are looking to, maybe they're literally, you know, thinking, looking, where do I start?
Right, yeah,
what do
yeah.
I do? Where do I start?
Well, look, I hope to be able to answer that question in some significant detail later on in 2024, when our research is published and our policy templates are there. I think Engage, as I say, many of the trade unions have been looking at this issue, have been talking to their members, their female members, in terms of what supports they want. So I think a conversation there is useful. But I think just talk to your to your female workforce, indicate you want to hear what are the challenges that they face in their particular job, and recognizing that workplaces are dramatically different, the issues may be dramatically different as well, or what the employer can do may be quite different across workplaces. There are some workplaces, obviously, where the option of remote working at home from a day where someone's having a heavy period, simply it's just not possible, particularly in a lot of the service industry. So what are the other things that can be put in place that will make some kind of mitigation of the particular symptoms that someone's facing?
I love that. I really love that, because when you do that and you go out to your colleagues, your employees, then you're on the first step to a supportive, collaborative relationship and discussion around menopause, which, you know, I think is so important.
And I think in most workplaces, the fact that they see an employer asking this question, but it's asking the question and making a meaningful response. I think when they see that in itself is a really valuable statement, and a statement of the values of that particular workplace.
Yeah, it's like, it's not a tick box.
No, it has to be. It has to be meaningful.
Yeah. Have some workplaces done it as a tick box? Unfortunately, probably some have.
Yeah.
I will say the majority I've worked with, they're in it for longevity. And like there's many that I've worked with for a couple of years now, because they're looking at covering it from all different angles, which I think is brilliant.
And look, I think there's more that government can look at as well. You know, over the last period, as you know, we've removed, we've reduced VAT on HRT, for example. But my colleague, Senator Pauline O'Reilly, she's been suggesting that maybe we look at making that free, making it available as a free medicine under medical cards and other schemes. And obviously there's a cost to that, but there, I think she certainly analysed that there's actually a saving in terms of, you know, having that necessary intervention early. So I think, you know, that's something, and I know it's something Pauline will be bringing up kind of coming towards next year's budget. But looking at those initiatives, I think is really valuable. And I think this government has shown good form, I think, on the health side and on the employment side. But I think it's important that we continue to advance and continue to make progress.
Yeah, no, I think any steps around HRT will certainly be welcomed. And I think, you know, for me, I'm a huge advocate for our young women, like from the teens onwards, who go through early menopause. So I think, you know, if we get to that stage, they, you know, if their top priority, I think, is so important. Because if you're buying HRT at the age of 12, all the way through up to the age of 50, that's very expensive. And, you know, unfortunately for those girls, they don't get any special treatment. And really, you know, they should, because, you know, nobody wants menopause at the age of 11 or 12, you know, but it's just one of the, you know, I guess, the many different early forms of menopause. And I think that's where that diversity and inclusion part is so important, you know, because again, in the workplace, certainly we know with the younger girls, the rates, back in 2017, we would have said it was 1% of the population.
Yeah.
The current statistics tell us it's 2.5% and unfortunately increasing, which is just so sad,
because
it's very challenging. Roderick, thanks so much. We've covered tons. And, you know, as I said, it's really uplifting, inspiring to see the passion that's coming in relation to women's health and changing women's health. So, you know, certainly, you know, on my behalf and also, you know, all my followers and listeners, I would just say, you know, thank you for the work that you're doing. And I think thank you for looking at menopause in the workplace, because this is something we can't shy away from. This. We've got to make sure that we don't lose the valuable wisdom that so many women have who might struggle for a couple of years at work. So we have to hold them through that as employers, as workplaces. And I think, you know, all the help we can get from the government in relation to that is to be welcomed.
Absolutely. And look, I suppose I also need to thank yourself and those who are advocating on this issue, from someone who has, I suppose, such a strong platform as yourself, to people in workplaces, people in unions who've been very clear in terms of starting that conversation and breaking that stigma. And it makes it easier for politicians, but it also makes it easier for men generally to engage in this conversation, to remove that mystique and look to bring in those very practical supports in a workplace setting, and those, I suppose, very significant supports in terms of health where it's necessary as well.
Yeah, great. Thanks a million,
Thanks
Roderick.
Thanks, really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Menopause Uprising with me, your host, Catherine O'Keefe. I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget to like, subscribe, rate and review, as it really helps the show.